Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tech Done Different. As always, I'm your host, Ted Harrington. And with me here today is our special guest, Arjun Rai, the CEO of Hello Woofy. Arjun, thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. What a pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me. And this is going to be an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to helping a lot of other entrepreneurial go-getters around the world get their businesses off the ground.
Yeah, no doubt. That was one of the things that I think was really appealing about having you on the show is that you definitely have some really interesting ideas from an entrepreneurial perspective about how to get things started, how to sort of scale things up. So maybe the first place to start is if you could just briefly introduce kind of your background and where you're coming from in the context of this interview. And then what I want to talk about, where I want to start is talking about this idea of how do we get more done? Why don't you just introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So, hey everyone, my name is Arjun. As I mentioned earlier, I'm founder of HelloWoofy.com, which is, in my opinion, a smart marketing dashboard for underdogs. We like to call small businesses, founders, you know, people who are looking to just get more out of, you know, their small business. So we like to call them small underdogs. And so I've been an entrepreneur since I was a teenager, built 4 startups, 2 venture-backed companies along the way. And so I know a thing or two when it comes to raising capital, building an MVP, putting sales funnels together, not for $18,000 as the gurus say, but for $300 and, you know, getting it up and running and you know, generating $160,000 off of that. So been in the industry and mostly in the communication side of things for about 12, 13 years now. And looking forward to talking about how we got, you know, from point A to point B or point A to point B to C to D. There's a lot of iterating and pivoting, but looking forward to having a conversation around that.
Cool. So yeah, let's talk about getting more done. When you and I were chatting before appearing today, we were talking about this idea that, you know, small companies, when you're a sole founder or there's just a small team, there's often too many things, right? We all have a gazillion things we have to do. And there's the challenge is often what's the most important things. And you sort of framed it around, which I thought was really cool. How do we get more done? So from your experience as someone who's been through this a few times, what should our audience think about in terms of how do we get more done?
Yeah, from a team perspective, communication is the most important thing. Not only in your startup, it's important to have that mindset in your relationships as well, right? Within friendships, within your personal relationships, communication is key. So one of the things that we use very early on in the company is Slack. We wanted to make sure that everyone across the world was on the same page, had the same messages coming across, had the same idea of where things are going, how fast they need to be done. And so I would say Slack was one of the biggest benefits or tools that we used that had the biggest, you know, benefit to us as a team. And we obviously scaled up, the use of it as we added more people to the team. So that was super important when it came to, you know, on the engineering side. Specifically, this is for people who are building software companies or tech companies. We used Jira. Atlassian became our best friend as well. Now it's very clunky for sure, but the fact that all of our engineers can put in, you know, snippets of code and, you know exactly what the other engineers are, what's in the pipeline, what's, you know, a under the idea section as, you know, nice to have, and what's actually needed to be done immediately, which are, you know, probably bugs or fixes or upgrades to the platform. I would say those two tools had a pretty profound impact. Now, when it comes to getting more done from another perspective, which is on the marketing side, on the graphic design side, on the WordPress side, I would say Fiverr was actually a huge, it still has a huge impact on our business today. We've been able to hire people and get things done for a couple hundred dollars versus getting it done for several tens of thousands of dollars here in New York, or any, you know, major agency would charge. So I would say on the graphic design side, you know, we get most of our graphics done for $10-$15. We get a lot of our WordPress, you know, plugins installed and, you know, WordPress maintained for a couple hundred dollars. So I would say Fiverr has been a great tool as well, a marketplace that has allowed us to expand very quickly versus, you know, other companies that might spend a lot of their, you know, raise capital inefficiently on, you know, on people or, you know, software that just doesn't have to be spent on. The money could be a lot more efficient. So I would say getting more done, get more done with more people, but have them all on the same page. Otherwise, you're just going to be running around with cats.
Yeah, I love the way you're framing it, that a way to get more things done is being efficient with our spending. And it's interesting you mentioned Fiverr. I've had a lot of success with Fiverr on some graphic design things myself too. So I definitely know what you're saying. One thing I find that's interesting about Fiverr though, is that it kind of has a bad reputation, and maybe you understand this better than I do. It seems like when you talk to people who care about design, they seem to sort of poo-poo Fiverr because what you get is sort of bare bones, right? It's like you pay $50 for a logo design and you get like two revisions on it. And it's not necessarily the person who works at, you know, the big marketing agency in New York or whatever. But if you know what you're looking for and you know how to give the feedback, you can still get it done. So do you think that the reason that people sort of look down their nose at Fiverr is because it takes more work, or is it maybe the people that are being disrupted by Fiverr that are opposed to it, or why is that sense?
Yeah, there's a little bit of all of that when it comes to a new market entrant, right? And disrupting the industry. I would say you have to take a look at either tier two or tier one freelancers. It's literally a search criteria, which you can put into the filters. I would say making sure that people have a 4.8 to 5-star rating is important, and have more than 100 projects under their belt, not just, you know, a dozen projects or so. So those things, keeping those things in mind, we've always found amazing talent that actually has done better work than most agencies I've seen, because I come from the agency industry at least. And so it's interesting because that means that there's so much talent out there that you could be working with. You could be, you know, they could be working for you. Whether you run an agency or not, you just get more done at the end of the day. So we've actually been very fortunate to go back to the same individuals over and over again. They're almost, you know, we're a repeat client for them, and just get, you know, whatever we need done very efficiently. They know our timeline. They know that we're a startup and we need things done within 24 hours, 48 hours. And the quality of work just speaks volumes.
Cool. Yeah, that's great to hear. And I think what people will hopefully take away from what you're describing isn't even necessarily about Fiverr, but is about how do we spend money wisely, which is everyone who's listening to the show, and I think everyone everywhere.
No, it's absolutely, especially if you're raising capital, you want to show investors, and, you know, talking about entrepreneurs for a second, you want to show that to your investors that you're efficient, you're frugal, not cheap. That's the difference between being cheap, being cheap and frugal, right? Frugal is that you're intentional about your spend. You're not looking to overspend, but you're intentional. And that's the kind of mindset I've had, is I have been cheap before and that just didn't get us anywhere. And we ended up having to redo things over, and the cost it obviously more at the end of it. So I would say, you know, Upwork is also another great option for longer term, you know, projects. Fiverr tends to be, you know, to your point, short-term projects, but, you know, both are great platforms. Just do your due diligence. That's all.
What should the criteria be that someone should be evaluating when they're considering working with this, again, not necessarily Fiverr, but working with some sort of outsourced entity to do, whether it's graphic design or other services that might historically be hired in-house? How do you evaluate these types of people? I mean, you mentioned some criteria, like make sure they have this rating, but okay, let's say everyone has that rating. Now there's like 100 options. What are you looking for?
I would say the other thing I would add to that is references. If you're not using a platform like Fiverr or Upwork, it's very hard to see what other people, you know, have said, other clients have said about, you know, the individual or the company you're about to work with. So I would say do your due diligence, just to my earlier point. You want to make sure that you're asking for references, you're asking for a couple of references, you're able to call the people, email the individuals, the previous clients, and kind of get their two cents of what was it like to work with the freelancer or the agency or the company. Just like any job interview, you do your due diligence with the background checks, right? You maybe give them a sample test. You maybe do a project that's $50 and you test them out. If they do really well, you give them a $300 project. When we were hiring our developers, we actually did a test on HackerRank, which is essentially the SATs of coding. It's a very basic test or set of tests. And you know, the developers that came out ahead, we were able to work with them as a result of that, because they showed us through the testing that they had the best score. They thought, you know, about the coding problems the best. And so there are a lot of tools, and there are a lot of approaches you can take to make sure that you're being efficient with not only your time more than money, but you're also being mindful of the other side.
Got it. So when you think about the experience that you've had, you mentioned you've had you founded a number of companies, a couple of them mm-hmm. venture backed. If you had to pick one, and I know we'll talk about more than one, but let's just pick one. If you had to pick one, what would you say was the biggest lesson that you learned in the process of those venture-backed companies? That could be either something that was a success you learned from or a failure you learned from.
Raise capital more efficiently. Be very mindful of, you know, who you're raising capital from, how you're raising capital, under what structures you're raising capital. I think it's very it can be very underrated in the beginning, especially for a first-time founder. You want to make sure that you have, you know, for example, clawback clauses in your founder agreements. You have provisions to, you know, have an advisory board. You know, you want to make sure that you have certain kinds of shares, like private, you know, preferred shares versus common shares allocated as well. These are like very basic things that anyone can learn about from, you know, just Googling 101s of startups. But So on the investor side and on the legal side, you want to be make sure you run your sound. The other thing I would say is, when you're hiring talent, especially if you're looking to pay them considerable amount of capital, especially upfront, you really need to test them out. You really need to work with them maybe on a 30-day trial and see how the relationship goes. If you like it, extend another 30 days and then bring them on full time. You don't want to jump right into the collaboration immediately as a full-time gig. All the people we have worked with till this day, we always test the waters for the first couple of weeks. If you like it, we give them more projects. If you don't, we part ways. And the way we structure the collaboration is very flexible. So I would say I definitely made bad hires in the past, and I learned as a result how not to hire people, and definitely, you know, have learned how to, you know, more efficiently and also raise capital from the right kinds of people. I think those two things are super important, especially for, you know, a startup or a tech company like ours. It's important that you take care of both those.
So this idea of the right kind of people, this is interesting, because it might be one of those things that's easier said than done. So what is the right kind of person? I mean, of course, this answer will vary based on different companies and personalities and all this stuff. But from your experience, what were the I'm reading between the lines here that there are some pitfalls that you learned along the way.
Yeah.
Look out for that kind of person. What's the advice here?
I would say look for people, depending on what you're looking to hire them for or raise capital, depending on who you are looking to raise capital from as well. Look for calluses, like those gritty personalities that know exactly where, you know, what it's like to be in your shoes, right? So what I mean is, we almost never take a meeting or even try to raise capital from someone who hasn't been in the trenches before, has not been a founder before, doesn't know what it's like to even build a company, right? Because if they came straight out of business school and they went into corporate America and never had built anything for themselves, even the questions that they give, even the comments that they, you know, provide on feedback, they just seem like they have no idea what the heck they're doing. And so I love calling in, you know, fake investors out, especially the ones who try to take advantage of founders. Keep that in mind that you're raising capital from people who know what you're doing and they've been in your shoes before and they know exactly how to keep you on the right path, at least advise you in that regard. When it comes to hiring people for your company, you know, make sure you're doing, like I said, we've talked about this a few times, due diligence on the skill set side, but also on the empathy side, you know, from a company culture perspective. Does the individual fit really well into the company culture, which might be, you know, for example, some startups, they say that take your, shoes off at the door, or, you should be kind to one another. You should be, you should give, gifts to one another. Whatever your culture is, make sure that you're bringing in someone that's going to live up to the culture and not try to, nitpick it, break it down, and not add any value, because you can have the smartest person in the world, but if they're not following your company culture will very quickly, go down the drain. And that's, I think, is the most important thing. Of course, as we're talking, we have people signing up and lights blinking in the background. So that's always gay. So that's a part of our company culture. We celebrate everyone who signs up, every revenue, every dollar that comes in, every small business owner that comes in. So that, keep those things in mind. And if you don't, then you can go down a path that you don't want to.
Cool. Yeah. For everyone listening to the audio version, Arjun has some lights that just started flashing in his office.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a fire alarm. You gotta get out, man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Apparently that's a signal that people have signed up. So
yep. Yep. In real time.
In real time. I love it. That's cool. Yeah, we had a we run a series of hacking events, and like ethical hacking, not building type of hacking. Mm-hmm. And there was at one of those events, we built or some of the participants built an internet connected gong. So basically, like, every time someone got a flag in part of the contest, it was like this audible, like, dong.
That's so funny.
So it's like similar to what I just saw happen in your office.
Yeah, you just got to make it fun, right? And bring people who have fun. You know, they could be the smartest people in the world, but they need to have fun. They need to be positive. They need to be, cut from the same cloth, essentially, or something similar, so that, you have some differences in there as well in the company culture and the conversations, but, it's not so different that it completely derails any conversation and every conversation. It's just to the point it's not being actually productive.
This topic we're discussing right now about culture is one that I'd actually really value. I mean, I value your input on everything we're talking about, but in this particular topic, the way you brought it up, I've been sort of thinking about this question a lot. I'm curious what you think. So what I heard you say was and correct me if I'm misinterpreting what you said, but it sounded like you're saying, find people who sort of fit the company's mold. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree with that culturally, but I've also wondered about that from the other side, which is to say, well, if you wind up building a company where everybody fits the same mold, does that create blind spots?
Yeah.
Because you now have this sort of homogenous culture. What's your opinion on that? Is that a problem? And if so, how do you deal with that?
You actually will seldom come across that situation, because you'll find people from different backgrounds coming in all the time. Whether they fit in, they can fit the culture in perfectly, but they're going to have different education backgrounds, different levels of education. They're going to, ethnicity wise, it's going to be diverse, so they have different, cultures of their own, as far as, their religion's concerned, or their, which country they grew up, or even which town they grew up in. You're going to have different skin colors, you're going to have different issues around skin colors, in the present as well, different tastes. So just like our DNA, no company will be identical. No two individuals will be identical. And even the 1% difference, even the 0.5% difference will collectively add up enough difference to create interesting conversations. And that, I mean, unless you actually actively say, I'm only hiring from Harvard, I'm only hiring white people, then you got a situation where you're actually disregarding, to your own detriment, an entire population of people who are talented and bring different backgrounds. And actually that will impact the product that you end up building, or the service you end up building, and the culture you end up building. But I don't think, unless you're maybe a major law firm today and you're only hired from specific university, like in the show Suits, I think even Suits realized that bringing people from other backgrounds and other opinions of that nature, they actually leads to better outcome, net positive.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you're saying about the importance of diversity of ideas, right?
Yeah.
Which that was more or less what you were describing, right? Like, and I like the way you even thought, the way you described it, all the way down to, people of the same ethnicity and gender and nationality still are from different neighborhoods even, or different cities. And, those, they have different, you didn't say this part, but like their socioeconomic backgrounds, their family back, like just everything about every person is going to bring a unique layer. And so that's real positive, because it seems like in tech today, a lot of the conversation is that tech feels too homogenous to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm curious if you feel that way too.
Not in my immediate circle, but I have, and that's probably just because of the friends I choose to be around and the founders I choose to be around and the venture investors that I walked into a venture capital firm a couple of months ago. It was actually over a year ago at this point. Gosh, this 2020 just went by so fast. And I started getting, my gut feeling started telling me something's wrong about the firm. The way, you know, people were working at the firm, the way people were talking to each other. And one lady, actually, she was like an analyst or a junior there. And I was talking to the principal, actually. And the analyst being, you know, on the totem pole below the principal, all of a sudden started yelling and asking me questions left and right, almost like, you know, she was reading them out of a textbook. And something occurred to me that I was like, something's wrong here. First of all, she's not letting the main person who's the host of the meeting, the office hour for the venture fund, actually speak. And she's asking me questions, seems like just for the sake of me, you know, making herself seem really important. And so that was a red flag right there. And I went back home and I wrote an email to the principal saying, hey, this wasn't okay, dude. This is not how you treat a founder, especially doing a office hour in front of interns, because there were a whole bunch of interns there. And it's funny, the principal didn't respond really. The founder of the firm responded and wrote me an email. I called him up and the first thing he said is, well, she's very smart. She has this degree, that degree. She's from this university, which is one of the top five universities in the country. She knows what she's saying. I was like, that's not what I said. And right. Clearly he actually emphasizes hiring. It was a he of a firm, and no surprise there. But he emphasizes hiring specific people from specific universities of specific caliber with a specific GPA. And if you don't fit that, you don't work at his venture fund. And I was like, I knew it. There was something wrong about the walking in. The energy was off, and all the way down from the founder. So company culture is or any kind of culture, starts with the helm. It starts with the founder, starts with the people who are working for the person, who are invested in the company. As soon as you walked in, I could tell something was off. And obviously hearing it from the founder, who's a very famous venture capitalist in New York, I could tell that something was off. And it's very important. It's systemic at the end of the day.
And what you felt was off was that they narrowed their hiring parameters so narrowly,
yeah,
using narrow in the same sentence twice, that it caused sort of like herd thinking. There was,
yeah, and it also happened to be like, it looked like 95%, 97% of the office was completely all people of, you know, white descent, or, you know, ethnicities that were very specifically white. You know, I saw very few Asians. I saw very few African-Americans in there. It's just, there was not diversity at all whatsoever. I tend to be very sensitive to vibes, and you know, you should really, you know, listen to your gut feeling, really listen to your inner, you know, child that is talking to you. At the end of the day, you know, we didn't want to raise capital from that firm. We raised capital. We raised nearly, you know, $700,000 from equity crowdfunding as a result of other efforts we were putting in. And so you'll find what you need at the end of the day. If you believe in the law of attraction, if you believe in putting in the right effort, you know, thinking positive, those things will just happen. Just make sure you're surrounding yourself with the perfect kind of person or people that you want to aspire to, because you are the average of the five people you hang out with.
I want to talk about that too. So, okay. Now there's two things that you said I want to talk about. One is, how do we do that? Or like thinking about the average of five people. I totally agree with you there. But the other was this, this comment that you made about, you know, you're sensitive to vibes and you trust your gut. And I love that, because when we think about running a business, right? Business is such, in so many ways, it's very devoid of emotion. It's very rational. It's very logical. It's based on facts, but yet here is really profound and great leadership advice, which is also pay attention to the intangibles. So how do you think about that? Is there a way that you can put into words that advice and how people can think about it more specifically than just trust your gut, which I agree with?
There's a saying I heard on Shark Tank by Robert Herjavec, who is one of the sharks. And he says, The reason why I think he made an offer and he pulled out. And before he did that, he said, you know, one of the reasons why I'm pulling out of this offer is because I believe in the following. It ends the way it starts. And, you know, and it's so true. Any relationship I've ever been in or any business dealing I've been in, if something has been off from the beginning, it usually, and I've gone through with it, it usually ends because of something that was a red flag in the beginning. And so as soon as I see that, I know there are plenty of opportunities. There are plenty of quote unquote fish in the sea to go after. And, you know, whether the pond is bigger or smaller, it doesn't matter. Just work with people who you like to work with. You can invite to dinner. You can have a fun evening over drinks with, right? That's really when you know you've made it, is when your friend circle, your family circle, your business circle, you just have memories all over the place. Good memories and positive memories you'll remember 15, 20 years from now.
Yeah. That's really powerful. The framing of it ends the way that it starts. So essentially what I believe that you're saying with that is if it starts off with red flags firing and you're like, that wasn't a good start, but we'll get over it. You should say, no, we're not. We probably won't get over it if that's the way that it starts. Is that?
Yeah. When we sell for $1 billion or more, we IPO for several billions or hundreds of millions, we'll see what ends up happening. Make sure you remind those people as well along the way that didn't believe in you or gave you slack for the way you were going about things, because they need to be reminded to think differently down the road. Because if you don't do that, then they'll continue thinking the same way to their own detriment and the people they come across. So make sure you remind them from time to time.
I've, over the years of making hiring decisions, I've struggled with what I think is a little bit of a contrast that are two things that you've talked about here today, which are to, basically hire people that you like. Mm-hmm. But the other part, I don't know if you've mentioned this specifically, but I'm curious to your thoughts on this, which is, well, what if I only hire people that I like, and now I become blinded to like essentially creating the company that's in my mold? Yeah. And how do we prevent against that happening, right? Where it's like, well, now everyone who works here is like me and I like all of them, but it's like, there's this huge part of the population we didn't bring in because I don't necessarily like them the same way, even though they're equally capable. How do you think about that?
I think if you're going to hire smart people, you can quell or suppress smart people from sharing their intelligence. They want to share their intelligence, and if you do, they're going to leave. If you don't like let them share and put, you know, really expand and grow within the organization, they're just going to naturally leave. So I would say, obviously, have a culture where anyone can speak up at any point respectfully, and whether it's on the Slack channels or it's in, you know, Zoom meetings or in person. We always have the ability for anyone to speak up in any of our meetings, no matter who's running them, and have their opinion shared, their advice or their ideas shared. And because I know our engineering team is a lot better than I am at engineering, right? We know my project manager is a lot better at managing projects than I am. So letting them have a chance at it, it makes sense. It's you're the one that you're going to bet, you're as a business owner, you're going to be benefiting from that. So, and that really comes from maturity. That really comes from knowing how to build a business or not, how not to run a business as well. And so I would say, just at the end of the day, I think it just figures itself out. But that's the point of having mentors, having people who've done it before, have made mistakes before around you, having an advisory board, having a mentor or mentors. That's the benefit and the upside of having that experience on available to you.
I love it. That's such good advice, and definitely some ideas that I'm going to go implement. I mean, let's be honest, hosting this podcast is like TED consult hour. Here's the problem I have. Guess, can you help me solve it? So
totally. I was in a mastermind yesterday, and I was put on the opportunity seat, which was basically you share your business, your challenge, and people around you will start helping you out and asking questions. So this is your opportunity, chair.
I love it. Well, as our time comes to a close here, let's talk about sort of the future from your viewpoint. So when you think about the problem that you set out to solve when you founded this company, What does the next 12 or 24 months look like in the pursuit of that problem? Like, how is the problem going to change in your mind over the next 12 or 24 months?
It's so interesting. I mean, our industry grew so fast during COVID because, I mean, one of our competitors added $1.2 billion approximately to their market cap. It's a publicly traded company. And at the same time, we end up integrating with one of our biggest competitors, co-creators at this point, a partner named Hootsuite, right? So we know what the big players are doing and how they're expanding and things of nature. And well, the next 12 to 24 months to your question, or even the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years, the whole need for automating, creating amazing marketing messages, whether it's on social, whether it's in long form through blogging, or we've actually built a smart speaker scheduler as well, where you can schedule video, audio content directly into these devices, the Amazon smart speakers, right? The ones with the touchscreens, the ones without any screens, the ones that plug into your TV. Anyone can schedule content for the price of a cup of coffee. So that whole industry, we think, is going to grow like never before. And, you know, and any marketing channel would never have grown this fast, or will, you know, in history will never have grown this fast. So as far as that's concerned, we're raising capital. You know, anyone can invest as low as $100 into our campaign, because we want to bring along all the people who believe in our company for the ride. As we scale, our small businesses scale, you know, the companies who believe in our product. And so we're just going to keep doing that and building the biggest company in the world, helping the smallest. And that's kind of where we're going to be going in the next few years. But the next 10 years, we want to become a multi-billion dollar company. But again, not forgetting who's, you know, the kinds of people that have helped us get there, which is the smallest of small businesses.
That message is super inspiring. I hope that you do that. Become
Thank
a multi-billion dollar company. And we will post this video many times.
Sure, absolutely.
Obviously, we'll post it between now and then. But we'll be cheering for you from the sideline. And Arjun Rai, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
And for everybody else, if you want to learn more about the show or appear as a guest yourself, just go to tedharrington.com/podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.